Sandy Clough On Demand is brought to you by First Bank.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Great Sandy Clough.
Our thanks to Dr. Rick Perea, and you can hear all of our conversations, including our daily visit with Cecil Lammy, our Fan Broncos insider, coming up at 11:45 by listening to Sandy Clough On Demand, brought to you by First Bank at 1043thefan.com. Lots of good stuff from Rick Perea, as always. Start of the show today, talking about the Bronco defense and what is so reminiscent of 2015 as far as the Bronco defense is concerned. And I agree, if you're comparing one defensive group to another defensive group, there do seem to be some similarities. In fact, DeMarcus Ware was in the building on Sunday for the Broncos and Cowboys, having played for both teams throughout his Hall of Fame NFL career. And Ware said at one point that if he had known back in January that Shane Ray would be injured so severely that he might miss up to the first half season of 2017, he might have come back and played another year. I know there were other teams around the National Football League who tried to persuade DeMarcus to come back and play another year. You talk about a guy who understood and understands all the things we were talking about the last 35, 40 minutes. DeMarcus Ware was an enormously gifted National Football League player, yes. But what made him great, what made him more than just good, was his emotional intelligence. And that was the core of the brand of leadership that he brought to the Broncos. And I think DeMarcus Ware would agree that the defense might be as good or even better this year, largely because the offense is so much better in 2017, at least through 2 weeks. I know it's a small sample size, but it does work against trends throughout the league in which offensive play has been worse and or defensive play has been better. And a lot of theories being advanced, most involving offensive line play deteriorating. And we talked about this being a drop-off reminiscent of what we saw from 1999 to 2000. What I remember about that year is you went from a world championship St. Louis Rams team, the greatest show on turf, to the Baltimore Ravens. Brandon Stokely can talk about that a little bit. Early on in Brandon's career, playing for that Baltimore Ravens team that went through a stretch in the middle of the season where they went something like five games without scoring a touchdown on offense. I mean, it was really a dry spell. The very antithesis of the kind of team that had won the Super Bowl the year before. The Ravens won in 2000, much as the Broncos won 15 years later. The offensive play wasn't really all that much different when you go back to 2000 with the Ravens and measure their level of offensive success against Denver's in 2015. So I think the biggest difference this year is that the offense is putting points up on the board early and often, and in such a way that the Broncos have enjoyed big leads in their first two games through the first three quarters, 17 points ahead, and I believe it was 35-10 the other day, if I'm not mistaken, through three against the Cowboys. So they've had 17-point and 25-point leads through three quarters in each of their first two games. Now, the question on their coverage in the secondary is no fly zone even better this season. Remember, we've talked about the last 2 years that, according to Football Outsiders and their DVOA measurements, defensive efficiency, basically, as far as pass defense is concerned, that the Broncos were 10 and 20 points ahead of anybody else, at least 10 and 20 points ahead of anybody else in the NFL over those two seasons. So it's hard to say the no-fly zone could get much better, But I'd say Harris in the first two games has played as well as he's ever played. Tlaib, if anything, has been even better, maybe a little more consistent in his brilliance through the first two games. Roby has played pretty well, better than he did last year. The first night 8 days ago against Rivers and the Chargers was a little bit up and down, but Roby did have a pick in that game, and all three cornerbacks have intercepted passes so far this year. I think you do have Gotsis and Shelby Harris stepping up for Crick and giving Derek Wolfe and even Domata Peko some relief. They've been a terrific addition. Shelby Harris is brand new, though a veteran in the league. Adam Gotsis, because of a serious knee injury sustained his last year in college, really wasn't a factor at all last year. Got hurt in a less serious way this year during the offseason, and yet has seemed like a totally different player. How they maintain this, I sure think, given Buffalo's offensive woes, they'll be able to do it for at least another week. And Elway making the right call with Simmons over Ward. I think there was a way to keep both, but though Simmons hasn't really played that well in his first two games, and the Broncos, Tlaib in particular, have been very vocal about how much they miss T.J. Ward, Simmons doesn't miss tackles. I'll say that much for him. I don't think he's played that well in the first two games, but he doesn't miss tackles at all. And so it's a rosy picture for the Broncos, whether you look at the ESPN rankings, seventh, and on SI.com, rated sixth and one of the most improved teams over week one to week two in the National Football League. And that's off a big win in week one, where they were obviously even more impressive in week two. Lots to talk about here. We'll get to your texts and your phone calls. Cecil will join us later on in the hour on your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Great Sandy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Peter King of Sports Illustrated writes a weekly column on Mondays entitled Monday Morning Quarterback, and among his tidbits yesterday, Los Angeles attendance for the Chargers and Rams this weekend combined 81,993, 25,381 at StubHub Center. And at the Coliseum, 56,612. For the USC-Texas game, one game against two NFL games, attendance 84,714 versus 81,993. One college game outdrew the two pro games in Los Angeles this weekend. I don't know that you can definitively state that professional football's return to Los Angeles can be deemed a failure at this point, far too soon. And the new facility hasn't opened yet, and we'll see what happens when it does. But the Rams and Chargers have to be a lot more entertaining than they've been through the first four games of this season. The Chargers, of course, playing in Denver last Monday night, and then losing in the fashion that the Chargers, whether they be in San Diego or Los Angeles, seem very comfortable losing. And it's unbelievable how it's gone, as we mentioned yesterday, for Rivers, 25 games lost since he became the starting quarterback. And this is certainly not Rivers' fault. In almost every case, it's a matter of the fault line elsewhere. 25 games lost by 3 points, 2 points, or 1 point. 25. More than any other starting quarterback has suffered through, and I say suffered through as opposed to being the cause of. And, of course, the Rams were dynamite against Indianapolis in their home opener, but did lay an egg this past Sunday against the Washington Redskins in a game they fell behind in early, rallied to get even, and then finally lost by a touchdown. to the Redskins, who, by the way, of the four teams in the supposedly powerful NFC East to have played over the weekend, including the team dressed up as the New York Football Giants last night, Washington was the only team to win inside the division. The Giants got clocked by two touchdowns. The Cowboys lost by 25 here to Denver. Philadelphia did play a pretty good game in Kansas City, but ended up losing 27-20, and they were down 27-13 going into the final minute of the game. So this is the supposedly all-powerful NFC East that really took it on the chin, and I'm not sure that the Redskins would have beaten a lot of teams in the league with the way they played the other day. It was good enough to beat the Rams, but against many other teams, maybe you'd have to go to AFC to find a definitive example of a team that's established itself as being really, really good. I don't know what you do with the NFC. I know the ESPN rankings came out, and with the exception of Atlanta, I mean, but even the Falcons didn't play very well against the Bears, and frankly should have lost their opener in Chicago to the Bears, and we know the Bears are terrible. But Atlanta's a good-looking team at 2-0, and maybe they got lucky to survive the opener, but they were dominant at home against Green Bay the other night in their home opener. But after that, you've got Kansas City, and this is just ESPN, but I don't think the other rankings that we'll see during the course of the week will differ appreciably. After Atlanta, you've got Kansas City, Pittsburgh, New England, Oakland. Stop me when you get to an NFC team. I think Green Bay being ranked ahead of Denver is wrong, and I'm not going to get all worked up over it. It's 2 weeks into the year. But then you go Denver after that. So five of the seven top-ranked teams, according to ESPN's rankings this week, are in the AFC. Five of the seven highest-rated teams. If you want to put Atlanta, I'd put Kansas City at the top myself. If you want to put Atlanta there, that's fine. I don't know that Green Bay should be in the top six after its performance the other night. Packers, I know, are used to this. They've opened five of the last 6 years 1-1. They made the playoffs 8 straight years. Nothing to worry about. I mean, Aaron Rodgers doesn't even have to say relax this week and spell it out. But Denver's looked better in its 2 games than the Packers have looked in their 2 games so far. And then you have some NFC teams after Denver coming through Dallas, Seattle 9th, but then it's back to the AFC with Baltimore at 10, NFC with Tampa Bay and Detroit 11 and 12, Carolina at 13. But you get the idea. And I would say I could put six of the top seven teams in there as AFC teams so far. I might be tempted to put Baltimore in there, although Baltimore losing Yanda now, that's a huge loss. He might be the best offensive lineman in the league outside of the three guys in Dallas. That is a huge loss, losing him for the season. But the Ravens have been pretty good, certainly on defense, through their first 2 games this year off to a 2-0 start. Sandy Clef with you. Cecil on the way in about 25 minutes. We'll get to your texts, and we have phone lines open as well. 303-713-1043. Things looking good for the Broncos. Why are you excited? Specifically, why are you more excited about Denver than you certainly were perhaps even last year when the Broncos also started 2-0? On your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Great Sandy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
On your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Lots of reaction. Why are you most excited about the Broncos? In what ways are you most excited about the Broncos' 2-0 start? And as we mentioned yesterday, 2-0 starts aren't uncommon around here. Going back to the magical Super Bowl year of 1977, the Broncos have now, in the last 41 years, started 2-0 20 times. So we have, obviously, 19 results coming out of the 2-0 starts in previous years. And I was a little surprised that in only 11 of those 19 years previously in which they started 2-0 did they make the playoffs. I thought the percentage would be higher than that. We gave you the 2-0 percentage going back to the expanded playoff format in 1990 in the NFL, 63% rate of success in making the playoffs if you start 2-0. The Broncos, 58% over the last 41 years when they've gotten off to 2-0 starts 19 times previously. This is the 20th time in 41 years. They were 19 for 40 going into this year, but that they only made the playoffs 11 times. That translates into 58%. Of the time. But people are excited about this team, and I'm getting to some of your comments. It's got to be a no-brainer. The Broncos weren't kicking and screaming in the trenches after their Super Bowl 50 win. Take out Schofield, Sambrylo, Sly Williams, the old Adam Gotsis, all right, well, the old Adam Gotsis was a rookie last year who hardly played, but I get the idea. Insert Pecco, the new Gotsis, Shelby Harris, etc. Watson, Ron Leary, Billy Winn, the new Connor McGovern healthy. Well, Billy Wynn's out for the year with an injury, and Watson's been awful the first two games. As bad as you thought Donald Stevenson was at right tackle last year, and he was bad. It's an arguable point, at least according to Pro Football Focus. I suppose it's arguable, but that means there is one side of the argument versus another side, and one side of the argument is that Menelik Watson has been the worst tackle in the National Football League through the first 2 weeks of the season. But the texter goes on. This is from Cutter. We got nastier the same way we did when Denver during the late 90s Super Bowl runs seem to get meaner and meaner. Insert Dan Neal, Gary Zimmerman, Howard Griffith, a smash-mouth football team with explosiveness. The Broncos are back. T. Sizzle, a.k.a. the Doctor, is sailing this vessel. That's from Cutter. From Joseph, I'm excited because it feels like the 2015 season all over again. An offense to complement the defense. It feels as though Denver can beat anyone at any time. Love the Broncos' intensity. So excited for all of the contributions made by young players on both sides of the ball. From the 248, you got to be happy about the line on both sides of the ball, run blocking and run stopping, thanks to Gotsis balling and Bowles being a great draft pick, although an injured one at the moment. As far as the NFC East and decreased scoring in the league is concerned, the 719. Last week I mentioned the Giants being overrated. I would go so far as to say that the NFC East is overrated as a whole. I predict the AFC West versus the NFC East a probable record of 12-4 this year. Head to head. You know, that's the matchup. Each of the four teams in the AFC West takes on two at home, two on the road, the four teams that make up the NFC East. And so far it's 2-0, with Denver beating Dallas and Kansas City decisioning Philadelphia over the weekend. So I don't know about 12-4, but 2-0 is a good start. Now, Kansas City was at home and Denver was at home. Let's keep that in mind. Let's see how well Denver does playing at Philadelphia. I think all of a sudden, you're looking at the schedule before training camp opens throughout the offseason, and you're saying off that three-game road trip that they have, three games in a row, starting October 22nd in Los Angeles against the Chargers, maybe the break comes in the final game of those three in a row in Philadelphia. Not so fast on that count. The easy game of the three should be the one in Los Angeles against the Chargers. Eagles have a good team. Eagles have a good team. And I think that I agree with you on the Giants being overrated. Their offense is so bad, and really, if they get any injuries on defense, I'm not sure how deep they are on defense either. No team has the kind of depth that great teams used to have. Obviously, now with injuries being more of a factor, and you dress out 46 guys, and you get into trouble like Dallas did the other day when you go into a game and you decide, well, we'll go heavy with receivers. And I'm not sure quite how why they did this, because they had injuries in the secondary coming into the game. But they had three injuries they sustained during the game in the defensive secondary, and they didn't dress the full complement of defensive backs on the active roster of 53. So when they had as many as three injuries during the game, they were in a lot of trouble. But, you know, Dallas, I think Dallas is a good team. I think given the presence of so few clearly outstanding teams in the NFC, even if you allow Green Bay a mulligan on Sunday night in Atlanta, you look at the Falcons, you look at the Packers, I'm impressed with the Eagles, and those are the only three teams. And I guess Detroit, the Lions look different. And I really like Stafford at this point in his career. If I were to name four teams in the NFC, those would be my four. I know Seattle keeps getting ranked in the top 10 in all these rankings, and I know their defense is still very good, but their offense is so bad, I think at some point that begins to affect the defense, much as the Broncos being so bad on offense affected the defense last year and resulted in some degree of dissension, I think, some of it openly displayed on the field that existed last year here in Denver between the offense and the defense. And I have to think in Seattle, the same thing's going to happen. And I'm not saying that everybody hates Russell Wilson. I mean, I think that story's been overplayed. Wilson's, I'm sure, perceived in Seattle by his teammates as being more of a victim than the cause of their offensive problems. But Ryan says it best. My greatest excitement is obvious. The offense potentially can be a top 10 scoring team. They're, I believe, tied for fourth now, or fourth overall in scoring through 2 weeks. And with this defense, I believe it makes Denver almost by definition a Super Bowl contender. Week two or not, it's light years ahead of last year. See if Cecil Lammy agrees. I'm sure he will, at least for the most part. Our fan Broncos insider joins us next.
Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Great Sandy Clough.
Cecil will join us momentarily, and I am corrected, and it's actually been 12 out of 19 years, not 11. So that gets us into that range that's more typical of what we've seen of teams starting 2-0 going back to 1990, what the Broncos have done. 12 out of 19, the years they missed after 2-0 starts, 1992, 2001, 2002, 2007 through 2009. Yes, in all 3 years they started 2-0 and failed to make the playoffs. And the seventh year, of course, was last year in 2016. Why is there seemingly more excitement this year about the Broncos' 2-0 start? And I think, anyway, more substance in believing that the Broncos can sustain it. And I know, listen, we were excited last year when the Broncos opened at 2-0, excited about their prospects, as in optimistic, as in feeling good, not in a partisan or rooting sense. I mean, after all, they beat Cincinnati in a home opener, which back a year ago was not commonplace. And, of course, on opening night last year, getting past the Carolina Panthers. So the 2-0 start last year felt pretty good. This year feels different. Does it feel different to you, Cecil Lammy?
Yeah, it does, because this team isn't playing their best football. I mean, that's something. We look at how dominant they were against a true Super Bowl contender in Dallas. Put Denver in that same picture, by the way. And you look at, you know, how things still have yet to fully click on all cylinders, both offensively and defensively. You're seeing some stuff that they could clean up. They left some points out there. Anybody on offense will tell you that. On a week that they went out and absolutely smashed their opponent. So you can feel good and feel great about this team because they're not, you know, 100% healthy. They're not playing perfect football. They're not getting every bounce of the ball to go in their direction. They're overcoming adversity. They're playing through injuries, and they're not yet fully clicking. And that's scary when you think about what could be this year, Sandy.
Cecil Lammy, our fan Broncos insider, of course, brought to you daily by Golden Oak Lending. And I think most all of us feel this defense is as good as the Super Bowl winning one. Why do you think it's as good as the Super Bowl winning defense was in 2015?
It's the attitude that we're seeing, especially from the run defense. We already knew the no-fly zone would be in place. People, you know, have had their fears assuaged about the loss of T.J. Ward. This team can play quality football with Justin Simmons, Will Parks, Jamal Carter, among others back there in the secondary. But you look at the way the run defense is really bringing that aggression, bringing that attitude up front, and the way that they are fogging the gaps, as Vance Joseph has talked about, and stuff in the run. I mean, we go through this schedule. When it came out, we had our schedule special on the Fan.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, my God, look at all of those running backs. Look at Melvin Gordon and Zeke Elliott. Up next is LeSean McCoy. And
yes.
McCoy is a different runner. McCoy is a dangerous runner, and it's a zone-blocking system, which is different from the power smash mouth that the Cowboys try to run, couldn't get running against the Broncos. But it's really the run defense, how they've been tested, how they've matched that, and how they've risen to the occasion.
Obviously, and I think John Elway would be the first to agree, the defense benefits when the offense grows. And this was the kind of growth the Broncos had hoped for a year ago. And certainly they started well last year in the first couple of ball games against Carolina and Cincinnati. But more points on the board this year. And that means more, Cecil, this year to me, because as the Wall Street Journal reported this morning, in looking through the offensive numbers of the first 2 weeks, scoring's down about 3 points a game. And you say, well, it's early in the season. How about other years? Hasn't scoring been harder to come by early in the season? Yes, but the difference has been something like 0.3 of a point, not 3 full points. And
right.
The Broncos are trending upwards in an era where offensive output, or in a year at least so far, in which offensive output is way down around the league. What a great sign that is.
Bucking the trends, if
yeah.
you will. And what it comes down to is comfort and knowing you don't have to do everything. I mean, you felt last year, especially with the offensive struggles and the lack of a running game and the offensive line woes, which are still kind of there on the right side, at least in pass protection with Menelik Watson. But you felt last year the defense, they had to do everything. They had to carry everything.
Yes.
They could not have a stumble. They could not give up an early score, which they did. Then they'd play from behind. They'd have to pull themselves out of a hole. They'd have to play perfectly. They'd have to be on point. And that's not the way football is. Football is a brutal and violent game that many things go wrong during the course of a game. You can have the world's greatest game plan. It can go out the window in the first drive. So this Broncos defense now has comfort and confidence, not only in that offense, but also in Trevor Siemian. I mean, you hear it any time any one of those players talks, whether it's Von Miller, Aqib Talib, whatever. On that defensive side, they have a comfort and a knowledge that if they do their job, Trevor's going to take care of his business, and this offense is going to carry the load, which only makes them better, which only makes the defense more dangerous and more frightening for opponents that now don't have a lead on the Broncos, that now can't sit on the ball. You know, bring on the Patriots in that game plan last year where they tried to sit on the football like a hen trying to hatch an egg,
yeah.
because they felt they didn't have to score points against
right.
the Broncos
right.
offense. Now they have to.
Well, here's a big change, too, I think, in the first two games. 68 plays to 56 for the Chargers in the opener 8 days ago. 73 plays to 66 for the Cowboys the other day. And that's been a contributing factor in giving the Broncos the best yard differential rate in the league so far this year. They are number one. And obviously the point differential is impressive too. But running all of those plays, averaging over 70 plays per game, that certainly wasn't the case last year.
Yeah, and they don't have to gimmick it up either. You know, you usually think of that type of play count. You go, okay, there must be some sort of, where's Chip Kelly at, right? Where's he hiding? And he was up in the 80s as far as his play count. But if you get that play, and Sandy, it's also at altitude. Like, you can use altitude as a weapon. It's not just a basketball.
Yes.
But in football as well. And you wear it on your opponent.
You know, baseball, you get the distance that the ball travels. But in the three other sports, which are motion sports,
right,
it's a huge advantage, and you're foolish not to take advantage of it. And you're running more plays than the opposition out here in this altitude. You are, by definition, wearing them down. All right, I'm going to give you the top six NFL passers in terms of passer rating through the first 2 weeks. Sam Bradford, number one, small sample size. And as is usually the case with Sam Bradford, he's hurt now. Who knows when he'll come back. Alex Smith, number two, probably a surprise. Derek Carr, number three, not a shocker. Matthew Stafford, we saw him last night play very efficiently, if not spectacularly, against the Giants. He's number four. Matt Ryan, Super Bowl quarterback, MVP, number five. And Trevor Siemian, number six, ahead of Rivers, ahead of Brady, ahead of Breeze, ahead of Roethlisberger, ahead of Rodgers, and ahead of, obviously, this week's opposing quarterback, Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, well ahead of what the Bills are doing there. What in the world are the Bills doing? We're going to get into that during the week. But when you look at Trevor Siemian, it's running the system to a T. Now, some may take offense, like, oh, call him a system quarterback. Well, everyone's a system quarterback at the end of the day. Tom Brady's a system quarterback. Joe Montana was a system quarterback. What did they do? They ran their systems perfectly. So what you have is you have a mesh of Mike McCoy going to Trevor Siemian. What do you like to do? What don't you like to do? You know, where do you like to attack the field? Now let's do that and keep doing that. And Siemian is responding by performing and executing at a very high level in this system that is designed to bring the best out of him. And when you see him throw to those wide open receivers, and you see him make some stick throws as well, but you see him throw to those areas of the field that are wide open, that's by design. That's by choice. That's him knowing where to go with the football. That's the system designed specifically for him, for his strengths, how to best utilize these wide receivers. And the space, Sandy, I in going back and watching this game, and I'll watch it for a third time later today and finish up my charts, when I look at the space that is available, the way that Mike McCoy spreads things out, gives you so much. Look at the C.J. Anderson touchdown reception. Like, there's just so much wide open space for him to exploit, for him to utilize his, you know, balance and vision and cutback ability. It's simply fantastic. Not just Anderson, but Sanders, Thomas, and Siemian running the show.
We talked about the points on average nosediving from last year to this year. Do you have any theories? We've had a few advanced today. Quarterbacking, offensive line play, that's been a common one. Trent Dilfer mentioned in this Wall Street Journal piece, hey, the defensive coordinators are smart guys too, and they're starting to understand this throw-first mentality. Is there a particular theory that you would have in explaining the drop-off in scoring that would be more inclined to prevail than other theories would?
Well, I don't mean to be a doomsayer when it comes to the NFL, but quarterback play. Like, you have to have quality quarterback play. This league thrives on great quarterbacks. Those are the guys we remember, right? Those are the guys that we talk about for decades and sit on the bar stool and argue with our buddies. So you've got some quarterbacks that are, you know, trying to get up to that next level. You've got quarterbacks that are kind of falling off a little bit. We could talk about Eli Manning there, et cetera.
Oh, wow.
So you want to see improved quarterback play. Plus, just look at beautiful game plan. If I go back to week one and how the Chiefs played Robert One against Tom Brady.
Yep.
And about how they dared him to throw to the outside and they
right.
dared him to throw long. Now, not
right.
everybody can do that.
No.
And maybe you can only do it once. But just the knowledge and the wisdom of how these NFL defenses with their own athletic playmakers are catching up to NFL offenses.
Well, to support your point, I'll read the final paragraph of the Wall Street Journal piece saying basically what you just said. The aging of NFL's elite quarterback core doesn't bode well for fans who have become addicted to the high-scoring shootouts of recent years. The
right.
last time the league's week one starters were older than this year's was 1993, and that year was the league's lowest scoring season since the 1970s. So, again,
wow.
if you're a doomsayer, they've even taken it a step further. But, yes, the best quarterbacks in the league, with the exception of Carr, and so far this year, Simeon, tend to be older guys. Carson Palmer looks done. People are saying, well, Brady played well the other day, but it was against New Orleans,
right,
possibly the worst defensive team in the league. They haven't been able to stop anybody for years. So I think it is a problem. I think it is a factor, and an understated one. A majority of our texters are saying, well, offensive line play is terrible, and that's certainly true. But I think the aging at the quarterback position and the people aging and perhaps declining outnumber the young quarterbacks who are established in the league right now. But thankfully, yeah. here in Denver, Trevor Siemian seems to be on the way toward establishing himself as a 25 and under quarterback of note in the contemporary NFL when there really aren't that many. And I think even right. somebody like Mariota has been disappointing in his first couple of games. He hasn't played that well, although Tennessee did win the other day. Always a pleasure, Cecil. Thank you.
Be good, Sandy.
Great stuff. That's Cecil Lammy, our fan Broncos insider, brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. And we bring to you next Stokely and Zach for the next 3 hours on a very special day. I know that people aren't concerned with our internal dynamics, but it's great to see, as I'm sure, Brandon, you have today, so many of our friends here in the building from other radio stations around the country and some of our best friends, leadership in the Bonneville radio community are on hand here today. So there's an upbeat feeling. The city's excited about the Broncos and the 2-0 start. I'm guessing for you it feels a little different than last year. You and Zach, Brandon, will be talking about that a lot coming next on your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.